Hi, I'm Talissa.
And I'm Rachel, and this is Transatlantic Crime, a true crime podcast that covers stories from each side of the pond. Every week, we will both cover a separate story with a running theme.
Disclaimer, this podcast will contain swearing and details that some people may find offensive. If you are of a sensitive disposition, listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Transatlantic Crime.
Same place. You good?
All right. Yep. I just got like 50 texts at the same time.
All right, popular.
I mean, not 50, more like 4.
Rachel, don't try and make out your friends other than me. Don't try and sound cool. Although I have like 40 texts and I think they're all from my mum. What are you going to say?
This is episode 54.
Yep.
Welcome.
Welcome back.
Recording. We are recording.
We are recording.
What were you going to tell me about your, well?
My bed.
You tell me. Your bed.
Okay, yeah. So.
You got a new bed.
Yeah, I had to get a new bed because my old one was metal and everyone was like, don't get a metal bed, they're shit. And I was like, they're not. And it looked really beautiful. And I was like, I'm getting a metal bed. And the legs just sheared off it. They just fucking, every night I'd hear, dunk, where the leg was like falling off again. And I was my God. And then I had my new boyfriend round, if you'd stop going on about it for a single second, Rachel. And he is 6'6" and like 17 stone. So
wow.
He sat like down. Let's do the PG version of this. He just sat down on it. Okay. And it didn't survive the night.
So
basically that bed was fucked already, and then we just, yeah, that was its last night on earth basically. So I was like, I have to buy a new bed now. So I took it all apart. I took that bed apart, which was a fucking pain in the ass because all the metal was bent. Mm-hmm. And all like where I tightened it up so much with the Allen key had like threaded all the screws. So like, you know when you screw something too hard or too much and then it ruins it, so yeah. So the screwdriver just turns round and round and round and never gets a grip, like,
yes.
Yep,
yeah.
Done that to like nearly every screw, so it was a fucking prick.
Oh, no.
To get out. I had to use pliers. Like I had a blister on my thumb. I put it on. We have Facebook Marketplace here. Do you have that in America?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like Craigslist.
Yeah, yeah. So I put it on there, and I put £20, and I put a picture of it being propped up by books. Like I was like, look, no shade. Like it's shit. It's broken. But if you want it,
here is the truth of it all.
This is it. If you want it, you could have it for £20. Like,
yeah.
Come and pick it up.
Yeah.
And some guy went, I'll give you 15. I went, I'll take it. He's like, my final offer
just
is 15.
Take it away.
He's like, my final offer is 15. I was like, done. Basically ripped his arm off for it. And then he showed up and he was a Polish guy. And he already had, this is a king size bed, right? And he had a king size mattress shoved in the back of his car, normal estate car, just like a king size mattress.
No.
Folded in half and shoved in.
Yikes.
And I was like, dude, how are you going to fit this bed in as well? And he was like, I'll do it. I was like, okay. So I just basically took the money and ran. So that bed's gone.
That's what Will's like. He's like, when we're moving in somewhere and we go get something, he's like, yeah, we could just put it on top of the car. And then the whole way home, I'm just terrified that it's going to fall off on the freeway.
Some people have no respect for how big a boot of a car is.
Yeah. Or like they don't have that anxiety that something could go wrong at any moment like I do.
Like it'll be fine. Like piano just roped around the car.
Right.
So that was that guy. So yeah, but I mean, and like it really annoyed me because on Facebook Marketplace I got 4 laugh reacts
put
to the photos, and I was like, I'm not trying to be funny, like also joke's on you because I sold it, motherfuckers. I was like, fuck you.
That.
I was so horrible. I was like, you're mean, don't laugh at my shitty life.
You should have just posted like a follow-up picture of like you holding the money.
Oh my God, I was so tempted in the comments to be like, drinks on me, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
And he gave me 3 £5 notes as well. So good.
Nice. So what'd you get in place of the old bed frame?
So I was like, right, I'm not letting this happen again. So I was like, I'm not having a bed with legs. So I got like a bed that's like a solid bottom frame with drawers.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it from IKEA. Nice. And it was the most complicated thing I've ever put together. I say me.
IKEA always has that.
Also, like the pictures that they put on it, you're like, what the fuck is that thing? And where is it? Like, and they don't number, like the you would think the logical thing to do would be like to number an item and then go, all right, so this is item number one. And you put this here. There's no numbers.
Yeah.
And all the shit, all the shit that said box one on it was in box two. And all the shit that said box two was in box one. And I was like, this is a living nightmare. And Matt came round to help me put it together because he's nice. And like, what a fool. And I was like, he's a landscape gardener. So he did a whole day's landscape gardening and then had to come around and make this IKEA bed.
And
so I thought I'd done the right thing by like taking it all out of the packets and like being like, I'll just do that bit. I can do that.
Yeah.
And then it's all there.
Out there.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did all that. And he came over and like, he looked so tired. And then he was doing it and like, it's like a bit clammy over here at the moment. So he was like sweating. Like he ended up.
Oh, with, no.
He ended up with like no top on. And he was being so patient. I went, I'll help you screw this in. And he was like, what? He was like, something looks wrong. He was like, you've screwed that in the wrong hole. I'm going to have to unscrew it now. And I was like, you would be quicker without me. Not only am I asking you to make a bed that's not yours, I'm now fucking it up for you and making you having to go back a step. Yeah.
I love that. Like, I do that a lot where I'll lay it out. I'll be like, yes, I will help. And then it's just like, no, I'm doing more harm than good by just standing here and picking things
up. I'm a hindrance. There's no two ways about it. And he's like, could you pass me that screwdriver? No, it's that screwdriver. I'm like, oh, God, just get up and get it. Just get up and get it yourself.
No, the other one.
Oh, no. So patient. The one on,
no.
Okay, that's a pen.
I hope you repaid him with a big pint.
I made him dinner and I made him breakfast and obviously I'm nice to have around, so that's his reward.
Yeah. And he got to sleep in the bed, I'm sure.
Yeah, of course. So yeah. He sat down really hard on it though and it like cracked and I was like, be careful. I was like, if I have to do this again, Matt, I'm not joking, I can't handle it. And he was like, just laughing in my face. And I was like, honestly, no. Sit down gently, please. You don't understand.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've got a new bed, but the drawers still aren't made because we had to give up at 11:30 at night because we were like, we need to go to sleep. So it's got one drawer in it that Matt made and he went, I'll leave you. He went, I'll leave you to make the rest. You're perfectly capable of doing that. I was like, yeah, of course I am. And then I just like went away with my parents for 2 days, then did this. Like, the drawers are still there, like not made.
Yeah.
I'll do it next week, surely.
Any crime news?
So yeah, I listened to In Your Own Backyard or Your Own Backyard.
Yes, I've been wanting to listen to that.
Dude, have you not listened to it? Oh my God, it's incredible. It's so good. I listened to all of it and then I Googled what was happening with Kristen Smart because I knew there'd been like a break in the case, but I didn't know what it was. And I was like, do you know what? I'm going to find out all about it before I look at the break. So
what is it about? So in case our listeners want to listen to it as well.
Yeah, so it's about a girl that went missing while she was at college in California called Kristen Smart. And there's a guy who is the main suspect, but they just can't pin it on him. They just don't have enough evidence. But there is so much circumstantial evidence. It's ridiculous. And this guy's podcast basically got the investigation going again.
Wow.
And it's so not surprising.
That's
because
never the level we will be at.
Oh, fuck no. Fuck no. We're talking about building my bed and like fucking, oh my God, like tin pot radio.
This is not investigative at all.
No, but if you do want some of that, then that is where to go, man. It's so good. It's like the new serial. It's that quality. Yeah. It's really, really... and he's apparently like a singer-songwriter, the guy that does it, but I've not listened to his music.
Oh.
but I might do.
Okay.
Yeah, and
yeah, check it out. I'm gonna listen to that this week. I can't wait.
Oh, dude, it's so good, honestly. And then I listened to a podcast this week called Down the Hill, and it's about the Delphi murders, because I thought, like, you mentioned it, I think, in one of our podcasts, and it just got me thinking again. And I thought, is there anything that's happened with that case? Because that was a long time ago, and, like, they have fucking footage of the guy, and they still haven't caught him.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did was really petrifying.
Yes.
I wonder if there's anything with that. And I mean, if you want to know what happened in the case, then it's okay. But it's not in no way at the level of the in your own backyard one.
No, I have listened to that podcast. It's pretty good, but
it's summarizing what happened, really. Like, it's it's not digging. It's just exploring and telling you what happened. Whereas your own backyard one, he like fucking calls people from 20 years ago, figures out stuff that even the police haven't figured out, like it, well, that you know of, kind of thing. Because obviously they keep some things close to their chest. But yeah, it's so good, man. Like, he finds people that you're like, how the fuck did you find that person? It's really good.
I love it. That's one of my secret skills, finding random people on the internet.
Yeah, exactly. You could do an investigative podcast.
I could, but I just don't have the time. Like, I've thought about it.
Who the fuck has the time?
I know. How do these people have... How does Josh Hallmark have time?
Well, I guess it's his full-time job now, because he has like 1,000 or something
now,
Patreons.
But at the beginning...
I know.
He went so far into it. How did he have time for that? What was he doing? What was his job?
I want to know. Yeah. Thing is, you can ask him questions on Instagram. So I might ask him, like, what was your job before you were a full-time podcaster? But he's got other podcasts as well. Like, one is called, like, Letters from America or something. It's, like, not a crime one. It's another one. So maybe he was journalist. Yeah. Maybe he was, like, a journalist student or something like that. Like,
oh, maybe.
I don't know. I'm literally guessing. But yeah, he's got more than one podcast. And when he says this is an Our Americana podcast, like, that's his network.
Yes.
With all his own podcasts on. So it's obviously something that he wanted to do full time.
Yeah. It does take a lot of time.
Fuck guys, yeah. It fucking does. But it is very much worth it. And it's very cool. And like,
I think the
feedback we get when I don't feel like what we do is good enough. Like, to warrant.
No. Like we say, we're a tin can operation.
Shoddy
shit. Like,
the fact
that people have listened to us for this long and have stuck with us, it's just like...
I love it.
We do put a lot of hard work into it, and it's worth it. But when you make things and you think it's shit... It's surprising when people like it as well.
Don't laugh in your face.
Yes. They don't put little laughing emojis on everything you do.
I know. Oh, okay.
Okay, well, you're first this week. Do you want to get into it?
Yeah. Oh, actually, can I ask you a question that one of our listeners asked?
It's not a question about circumcision again, is it?
Nope, but it is from your sister. Another one. Not Sally, Catherine.
Okay. Hi, Catherine.
Where does Catherine come in the order?
She's second to last.
So okay.
She's number 8.
She's young blood.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, so she said, if you had to have dinner with a serial killer, who would it be and why? Your face says it all. And I think it's the same answer as me, which is no one. I don't want to have dinner with any serial killer.
No.
I hate them all.
Yeah, I don't think I would be able to stomach my dinner.
Maybe Eileen Wuornos, but only out of like sympathy to be like, I think she doesn't want company. Like, she's like, fuck you, fuck off, everyone. So it's not even like she wants me to go have dinner with her for a little chat. She's like, piss off. So,
yeah.
I guess the answer is no one.
Well, that brings up a point. I was going through all the men, but maybe a female serial killer would be more okay with, because I get their female rage.
Yeah.
And I could be on that level with them.
Can relate. so maybe a female one, possibly Eileen Wuornos, but I don't think she'd want to have dinner with me. is my answer.
No.
She seems she'd a lot
call
cool.
me an idiot and yeah, probably she, smash my food in my face or something.
She's lived a life. And I haven't compared. And then the next question right. was, if you could only pick one serial killer to remove from this earth before they committed any crimes, who would it be?
Geez. That's a tough one. I think we should answer that next week and think about it.
Okay. Cool.
Leave a cliffhanger there.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah. Good questions, Catherine. Thank you.
They were good questions. So this week, the theme is near misses.
Yeah.
So I heard this story, and it was on a TV show in England called 24 Hours in Police Custody. But I
nice.
Got that,
love
like,
that show.
Oh my God, it's fucking incredible. Find it any way you can. I think it's on Daily Motion for people who aren't in England, but it's on Channel 4 Catch Up if you want to watch it. But if you want to watch really old back episodes as well, they're all on Daily Motion because me and Carly went through a day when we like binged them all. They're so good. So this is the story of Ricardas Puisis, I think his second name is pronounced. He's from Lithuania. Okay. So if anyone from Lithuania wants to correct me, then please do.
We're open to it.
Yeah, we definitely are. So Ricardas came to the UK in 2015 from Lithuania to earn money to send back to his family. He left behind a mother in Lithuania and has a sister living in Germany and cousins in Ireland. So he is kind of a bit of like a lone ranger, really. He was a casual land worker when he was in Lithuania, and he lived really hand to mouth while he was in the area. I kind of want to say as well, I kind of did ripped a lot of this from The Sun, which I'm not proud of, and The Sun newspaper. And I ripped a lot of it as well from like a local newspaper from where he comes from, where the story is from, because okay. I was in a fucking hideous rush. So I'm sorry if it's not.
You know what? Sometimes you have to do that. And sometimes it's okay because you can change The Sun's wording to be a little bit kinder. And
yeah. Just get the facts.
Yeah, just get the facts and move on.
Yeah, let's not mention it anymore. I'm sorry I did it, but it had to be done. So he had no car, no close family in the UK, and very few friends. Due to his lack of English, he mostly operated within the local Lithuanian community. So he was 35 when he immigrated to Wisbeck in Norfolk. So Norfolk is like middle of the country to the east. And he started working on a farm picking leeks with some other Lithuanian immigrants. The program kind of says like these Lithuanian immigrants are like, they hang out together after work as well, because it's obviously easier speaking your own language.
Yeah, like, right. It's like your own community.
Yeah. And like they get you and they get where you come from. And obviously you can speak to them mm-hmm. just really freely. So they used to hang out after work and stuff. So he's quite close to his colleagues. And he was last seen at his place of work at Nightlayer Leak Company on the 26th of September 2015. After he didn't show up for work the next day and he didn't contact his family, he was reported missing by his colleagues. Police started a murder inquiry in November 2015. And this was because they
murder.
Had... Murder? Yeah, because they had witnesses saying that they saw him getting beaten by some of his work colleagues and appeared to be a fight, and they believe that he was killed because they hit him really hard on the head and he had like blood coming out of his head.
Oh wow.
And so they were like, yeah. it was all being translated at the police station, but they basically said, we don't think he would have survived how badly they beat him.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the guy that did the beating was like a gangster in Lithuania, and was saying things like, we used to get people to dig their own graves. He was just
Jeez.
A bad guy.
Yeah.
And everyone knew that was the last person that he was with. So they were like, we seriously think he's done something.
Mm-hmm.
They just think it got out of hand and he got killed. And they said that they worked hard, but they also played really hard. So they would work really hard all day, and then at night they would all party together.
Yeah, why not? If you don't have any family around either, and you're just a bunch of dudes.
No responsibility. Not got a wife to go home to, or like kids. So the police contacted every police force, every local authority, every health authority, and over 250 hostels. They also contacted 600 employment agencies and looked at local gangs, but they just couldn't find him.
Wow, that's extensive police work.
I know, right? But it's in Norfolk, so they're probably not that busy.
Yeah. What have we got to do today?
Yeah, this is it, basically. They flooded the town with posters and they interviewed the man that they believed may have murdered him, but they couldn't get enough evidence. And he denied the murder. Through a translator, he was like, why would I be sat here if I did it? But as you know, okay, that's not proof that you didn't do it.
Right. Just because you're a dick about it.
Yeah, cocky. Working on another tip, the police searched a house the accused had lived in at the time of the murder, and they couldn't find any trace of Ricardus.
Okay.
So that was in December 2015.
Okay.
And yeah, they released him with no further action. Then in 2018, Ricardus' Facebook page was reactivated.
Mm.
And his sister told the police that she had received messages from him, and she believed it definitely was him by asking him questions only he would know the answer to. But apparently, okay, he was really sporadic in replying and be online for like 2 minutes and then go away and not answer questions. Mm. Just be like, I'm okay, I'm here, and then answer her questions that she'd asked him. Okay. So the account had 69 friends and they were all his friends and family. And that led the police to suspect that he may be alive. The police tried to speak to him on the account, but had no luck. They were clueless as to whether it was someone playing a cruel joke and impersonating him, or if it truly was him. Although his sister said, mm-hmm, I think it is him. The police then traced the IP address of where the messages were coming from. And it turned out that the messages were sent from a mobile phone, and they were being sent using the Wi-Fi from the local Asda supermarket.
Okay.
So the police staked out Asda looking for him, but they never found anyone. So they tested.
This is such a mystery.
I know, right?
I haven't heard this story, and I'm like, what's going to happen next?
I know. It is twisty. So yeah, they tested to see how far the Wi-Fi from Asda would reach, to see if there was any like houses nearby or anywhere where you could sit and still get signal. Mm-hmm. So they could narrow down the search area where the messages would be coming from. And they saw a bench in a graveyard behind Asda that would still reach the Wi-Fi, and they decided to stake that out. They saw a person matching Ricardo's description approaching the graveyard and tried to follow him, but he realized it wasn't definitely him, it was a person that looked like him. But he realized he was being trailed and he hopped over a nearby fence. The police later found the garden into which he went. They found a tent with evidence that someone had been living there. However, the tent was now empty and the house was abandoned.
Okay.
That didn't yield anything, and the search had to begin again. So they're still going on how far the Wi-Fi reaches. And this is some fucking good Wi-Fi because it reaches to the nearby woods. So, yep. So they were searching the area and they found a shack, and it was kitted out with a mattress, food and clothing. And so it was evident that someone had been living there, and they staked that out for a bit. And then they found Ricardus, who is now 41.
Wow. Just in the shack hanging out. Fine.
He went back to it and they were like, hello. He was taken to the police station and interviewed by the police. Speaking to the officers after he was found, he described how he came to the Fens, which is basically, the Fens is an area of Norfolk which is really, really flat. Because I was with a guy and he was from Norfolk, and we said if we ever made a band together, we were going to call it the Fenland Mountain Rescue Club.
I love it.
Big time. So he said during the interview, I came to the UK through a friend who found me a job and a place to live. Everything was fine. After a while, I met with the people who set me up. And this one time they were partying and I was accused of stealing a pound off the table. And he said, I didn't take that pound. And out of nowhere, bash, bash, he hit me with a barbecue.
What?
When he stopped hitting me, he said I owed him £1,000.
Was this guy 10 years old?
I know, right?
What?
Yeah. The guy knocked him out and took him to his basement and said, you're going to sleep here for the night, and shut the door and locked it.
Jeez. Who is this guy?
Some fucking psycho.
Yeah.
And he said, I sat there, I don't know for how long. And he described how he and his minder, they went together to collect his wages. He would take some for himself. He took my bank card and my passport.
Jeez.
I was just staring, saying I didn't know what to say and from where to what to who and what to do.
Imagine you're in a foreign country and you get whacked over the head and someone just shoves you in their basement and is all of a sudden like, listen, I'm going to take all your money from now on.
Dude, I'd rather not. And his English is really not good.
Right. And you can't speak the language very well. And you don't know where the police station is, or maybe even that, like, who do you call? Who do you tell? Who do you ask for help?
Well,
that's nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy. So he said, they told me stories where he and his friends forced a guy to dig his own grave, which is what made the police think that he was in the Lithuanian mafia, like, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was, Ricardo said that his minder was drunk and he was high, and he had a bunch of keys in his hand playing with them. Then he hit me with the keys in my head. Blood was pouring out. Ricardo said he was threatening me with a knife and saying, where do you want me to stab you? There was an aluminium pole in the wardrobe for hangers. He started hitting me with the pole and it was really painful. I couldn't stand up. He told me to go downstairs and get a cloth to clean the blood, and I could barely stand. But he managed to walk downstairs and he said, I turned round to the door. I didn't know where to go. I turned left and there was a little park. I went to the park and hid in the bushes. And then I lived in the woods for 5 years. Ricardo described finding a tent someone had left behind and he slept in there. I was there all winter and found that place in the woods and stayed there. He was living on scraps and foraging for food from discarded tins. He said, I tried to avoid meeting people. Daytime I would stay inside, mainly going out in the evening for a few hours. I was there for such a long time, I lost my trust in everything. I didn't want help from friends. I told myself, what happens, happens. They'll either find me or they won't. And
wow. I'm sure getting hit in the head too didn't help his judgment in the situation.
No, probably not.
Yeah.
He's obviously got like some sort of PTSD and he's just completely freaked out and lost.
Yeah, and I've also heard that sometimes when you have head trauma, you can go into depression.
Yeah.
Which can obviously affect your decision-making skills. So he was probably like, nobody cares about me anymore. I'm just going to go live in the woods.
Yeah, and saying, I don't want any help from friends. What happens, happens. That's a depressed person talking.
Right.
Like, definitely.
Yes.
The phone that he was using, he just found it. And then he went and got the thing from Asda, like the Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
So that's what happened there. And basically the policeman that was in charge of the investigation said, we may never know the ins and outs. We need to establish what he has been a victim of. They didn't really know if it was modern slavery. They didn't know if it was a kidnapping. They didn't know, you know, they didn't know if this was something that was happening to loads of people or just him and what this fucking guy was up to. So Ricardus was rehoused and settled elsewhere in the country after his discovery. It ends well.
Good.
And basically this is what Superintendent Adam Gallup, who headed the inquiry, said. Ricardus was absolutely desperate not to be discovered. It was extraordinary that he lived where he lived for so long, remaining healthy and undetected. I don't know what affected him. Yeah, I don't know what affected him psychologically to make himself a prisoner in the woods, he said, and remains anxious to investigate whether Ricardus was a victim of modern day slavery. And that is the story of Ricardus Poisis.
So where is he now? Do you know?
I think it's a secret.
Okay.
But he has been rehomed in like a different area of the country. And like, because I think there is a certain part of the police that look after people that have been affected by modern slavery and like you know, victims of domestic violence and stuff, and like help them find somewhere else to live and not give them an identity, but like set them up, you know?
Yeah.
And make sure they're safe and get them like a social worker to help them and stuff.
Right.
They got quite good aftercare like system.
I'm glad that he has that now.
Yeah, I know, right?
Hopefully they weren't just like, here's a new place to live, see ya.
Oh, I fucking hope not. So that's his story, which is like, when we were watching it, we were like, what? What? Yeah, it's such I love that show. It's so good. That's just a taster of what you get on 24 hours of police custody.
But in 24 hours of police custody, obviously that story lasted for like what, 5 years? How did they, what part of the show, what did they show in the show?
I mean, yeah, it didn't fit to the normal format, but I think it was just such a good story that they put it on anyway.
Yeah. And they probably had a lot of footage, right, of interrogating the guy?
A little bit. And obviously you're only allowed to keep him for 24 hours before you have to let him go, like, if you can't prove anything, and they couldn't really.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was great.
I'm going to check that episode out.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a good one.
It's called, the episode is called Nobody, No Crime.
Mm.
They're very creatively named, which I enjoy.
Yeah, I'll definitely remember that, the name of that.
Yeah.
Because I'm crap at remembering names of anything or anyone.
Yeah, I'm not great.
Titles of songs or band names or movie names.
Yeah. I'm really worried that I'm, well, I just know I'm going to be one of those. I'm going to have dementia 100%.
I feel like I already do.
Yeah. Carly was like, I am going to be your carer, aren't I? I was like, it's likely. I'm going to be honest with you. It's likely.
I'll come live with you guys. She can be my carer too. We'll both just be old ladies remembering random crime facts, but nothing else.
Sounds great.
Still doing a podcast.
Oh, I hope so. That'd be fun. Sure, we'll, if we don't get a prize for anything else, we'll get a prize for the longest running. Yeah. It may not be great, but there's loads of it.
Can't remember anything, but here we are.
Still here. Like, what is it, like Jay Leno?
Oh, yeah.
Didn't that recently end?
Jay Leno, that ended at least 10 years ago, if not more.
Really? But he was going for about 1,000 years, wasn't he?
Yeah, he went on for forever.
Where are we getting these time measurements?
I don't know.
A long time.
Yes. I don't know. Anyways, moving on.
I've completely lost track of what time is in this lockdown, like, and coronavirus. Yeah. Like, I just have no idea. Yeah.
Right. What month is it? What time is it? What day is it?
Having said that, I said to Carly, I really think like coronavirus has like made me like forget words and dates and stuff. And like, I haven't said, she's like, you've always been like that. like, she's like, you can't blame it on this. Cause like basically
no change here.
Yeah. She was like, that's bullshit. I went to her. I went, oh, Arlo, this time last year, we didn't have you. And Carly went, yes, we did. What is wrong with you?
What are you talking about?
Yeah,
it's because 2020 doesn't count. That's why.
It was a bit of a blip in the time space continuum, I think.
Yeah,
just a big streak of shit.
Okay, I'm gonna get into my story.
Yes,
we'll move on from the shit that was 2020 and get into some more murder.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Yep. My story this week is the classic case of Richard Cottingham, a.k.a. the New York Ripper, a.k.a. the Torso Killer.
Ooh.
Do you know about him?
I think it'll ring a bell when you start. The Torso Killer rings a bell. Sounds awful.
You've definitely heard about this guy.
Yeah.
And warning that this story was very dense, so I had to cut a lot out. And
I did it in a rush.
I did it in a rush as well. So please excuse if I didn't include a fact that I might have missed something. All right. Richard Cottingham was born on November 25th, 1946, in the Bronx, New York City. He was the oldest of three children. In 1958, when he was 12, his family moved to Rivervale, New Jersey. This was difficult for Cottingham, as he found it hard to make new friends, and he became a loner.
Bit of a loner should be on the bingo card.
Yes.
Yeah.
I tried really hard to find out more about his childhood, but I really couldn't. But he also, around this age, started to develop an obsession for bondage porn.
No!
No.
No! That is far too early to know what your niche is.
Yes, especially in 1958.
Where, like, are you getting this porn?
Where are you finding it?
Yeah, this has to be some homemade under-the-counter shit.
Oh my gosh, makes me think that something was going on at home that shouldn't have been happening.
Yeah.
Like, where do you find that when you're 12 in 1958?
Jesus.
Anyways.
That is an ask.
Yeah. By his late teens, though, he had started to come out of his shell, and in 1964, he graduated high school and began working for his father at a life insurance company as a computer operator. Moving on to work at another health insurance company in New York, he was well-liked and seemingly normal. And so he worked with his dad, and then 2 years later, he started a new job at Blue Cross Blue Shield, and he did that all the way up until what happens in this story.
Okay.
So, in 1970, Cottingham met and married Janet. I could not find her last name.
She probably doesn't want people to.
Yes, exactly. I would have thought. She sounds like she was with it after what she did, after her part in this story.
Oh, no.
Like, nope, I'm noping out of here.
Yep.
So, they got married, and the two had three children over the course of their marriage. On the outside, they seemed like a happy and loving family, but Cottingham had, by this time, been arrested for drunk driving in New York City, as well as shoplifting from a department store in New Jersey.
Oh, God. What are you stealing? Like,
I know. That's one of the articles is like, it wasn't clarified what he was stealing.
But whatever it was, like, he's got a full-time job. He's not stealing bread to feed his children. He's obviously doing a bit of a Winona Ryder and having a moment of, just fancy stealing.
Just there for the thrill of it.
Yeah. Kleptomania.
Yeah. Both times he had to pay a $50 fine. That was it. Before Janet and Cottingham were even married, Cottingham had committed his first murder.
Oh.
So his wife had no idea. And this was proven later, but I'm trying to do it in like a timeline way. So
yeah.
In 1968, Nancy Vogel, a 29-year-old married mother of two children, was found dead in her car. She had been brutally strangled and left in plain sight without any clothes on in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey. The last time anyone saw her was 3 days earlier. She had been on her way to play bingo at a nearby church.
Oh.
And they found out later that it was possible that Cottingham and Nancy Vogel probably knew each other because he was a religious man as well. He went to church.
Yeah, of course he was, mate.
Yeah.
Massive red flag for me. Like,
yeah.
He was very involved in the church. Murderer.
So police had no suspects and the case quickly grew cold, collecting dust in a file for years. So that happened in 1968, 2 years before he had even gotten married.
But he's hiding in plain sight, isn't he? He's like BTK. Married, kids, involved with the church. It could never have been him.
Yep. And if you saw a picture of him, you just think, that's a guy that works in an office.
Yep.
That's it.
They're the ones you gotta watch. Yep.
Which is like half the world's population.
Yep.
So Cottingham was seemingly quiet for the next 10 years, with the exception of in 1973, he was charged with robbery, sodomy, and sexual assault, but all charges were ultimately dismissed for an unknown reason.
What?
I could not find anything more about this. He had this in 1973 and they just dropped it.
I would bet it's that somebody doesn't want to testify because it's harrowing.
I was just thinking that it, and also it was the 70s, so it's not like people were kind to sexual assault survivors.
No, they're probably like, you were asking for it, one word against the other. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah. But if the police had taken it seriously, he probably wouldn't have continued doing what he was doing. So,
very good point.
In 1979, Janet filed for divorce, charging him with extreme cruelty and refusal to engage in marital sex since late 1976.
You go, Janet.
Yes. They had been married for 6 years and they just stopped having sex. And then another 3 years, so 1979, she filed for divorce. She further alleged that Cottingham was a habitual patron of gay bars and homosexual spas, in quotes, in Manhattan.
She is taking him the fuck down.
Yes. However, the divorce at the time was not finalized. So she filed, but didn't really do anything.
Okay.
On December 2nd, 1979, firemen in New York responded to an alarm at a hotel near Times Square. What is he barking at again?
Who cares? Just carry on. Anyways. Like, it's sorry, guys, yeah. But I got fucking mental dogs. Like, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Arlo isn't here, which is the only reason you can't hear any noise here. If he was here, I'm sure he'd be making a nuisance of himself.
He'd probably be barking back.
Yeah. Stepping over the keyboard, stopping the recording.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. On December 2nd, 1979. So, like, she filed for divorce. And in that same time, it sounds like he kind of went on a frenzy.
Oh, no.
Not really keeping track of, like, his own traces of what he was doing. So,
yeah.
Firemen in New York responded to an alarm at a hotel near Times Square. Firefighter James Rogers forced himself into the burning room on the fourth floor of the Travel Inn shortly before 9 a.m. He saw two bodies on the bed, so he grabbed one, hoping to save their life. Carrying the female body down the hall, he was preparing to give her mouth to mouth when he noticed that there was no head.
Duh. That's horrifying. Yes.
Yeah. He said, in all of his years as a firefighter, nothing caused so much trauma for him.
Well, it's just the most unexpected thing ever.
Yeah. You're in a rush.
You're on autopilot.
Prepping to help this person, giving them mouth to mouth.
Whoa.
And then you look down and, yeah. So there were two bodies, and the second body was in the same condition. Both had their hands and heads removed.
Fuck.
They had been doused with lighter fluid and set alight. One victim was identified as 22-year-old Dita Gudarzi, an immigrant from Kuwait who was working as a sex worker. The other corpse has never been identified.
No!
When police began investigating, they found that the room had been booked 4 days earlier by a man going by the name of Carl Wilson from Merlin, New Jersey. Police discovered that neither the person nor the location existed.
Well, I mean, what? I don't know what the year is, but like, this is why people are like, oh, I don't want to be on the grid. Well, if you're not a fucking murdering, beheading asshole, then you've got nothing to worry about. Stop wanting anonymity. Yeah. It's worrying.
Right. Yeah. Anyways, there's a lot to cover. So.
Okay.
6 months later, on May 5th, 1980, the body of 19-year-old Valerie Ann Street was found by cleaners in a Quality Inn hotel in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey. Okay, this is kind of gruesome. So.
Now? You tell me that now. What else?
I mean, it goes, yeah.
Okay.
This guy was gross.
I'm prepared.
The cleaner was vacuuming under the bed and she hit something.
No.
When she went to look, imagine being this cleaner.
No.
When she went to look under the bed.
I don't want to.
She found the badly disfigured body stuffed underneath.
Oh.
The victim's hands were tightly handcuffed around her back or behind her back. She was covered in bite marks and was beaten across the shins. Autopsy showed that Valerie Ann had died of asphyxiation and traces of tape were found in her mouth and on her mouth. Okay, so another body had been found around this time, 26-year-old Marianne Carr, who had also been raped, tortured, and murdered. Also, it's a given, like all of these women had been raped and tortured.
He's sadistic fucker.
Yeah.
I mean, there's consensual bondage and then there's this fucking hideousness.
Right. Exactly. Clearly he didn't know anything about consent.
No.
or respect for anyone.
No.
The body they found was 26-year-old Marianne Carr. Her body was left near the same Quality Inn hotel in New Jersey. However, at that time, police had not linked it to anyone yet, so they didn't know that the two were connected.
What? That seems mad.
Yeah. 10 days later, this is where it's like, this is the frenzy.
Yeah.
10 days later, on May 15th, the body of 25-year-old Jean Rayner was found strangled and her throat cut in the historic Seville Hotel in New York City's Times Square. Her breasts had been cut off and she had been set on fire.
Oh, God.
With strong similarities to the previous murders, police began calling the unknown killer the Times Square Ripper and the Torso Killer.
Fucking hell.
On May 22nd, 1980, Cottingham picked up 18-year-old Leslie Ann Odell, a sex worker, working on the corner of Lexington Avenue and 25th Street in New York. She agreed to have sex with Cottingham for $100. Around dawn, they checked into the same Hasbrook Heights Quality Inn where he had left his last mutilated victim.
Oh my God, who is on reception?
I don't know.
Why are you not paying attention to this man?
Oh. I think if I were on reception and that had happened 2 weeks earlier, I'd be looking at every person.
They probably quit, didn't they?
Being like, did I see this person 2 weeks ago? Was it this? But he's so unassuming. Like, he just looks like a regular dude that... That's probably how he got away with it.
This is obviously, also this is like crazy, like brazen. He's just like waltzing in like nothing has happened. So like, why would you pay attention?
Yes. And I found out about this story because I was looking for near misses.
Mm-hmm.
And the story with the two bodies being burnt in the hotel room and the firefighter came mm-hmm. and took them out. So at that time, there was a journalist and he was staying at that hotel, or he was going to stay at that hotel, and he was waiting for the lift.
Yeah.
And the lift was taking like an obscene amount of time. This was before the fire or before anyone discovered the fire.
Mm-hmm.
So the lift was taking a really long time, and he was like, who is the asshole who's just
stopping at every floor? Yeah.
Yeah. But it was like it was being held on the same floor. Like, he could tell it was on the fourth floor.
Okay.
So finally, the lift came down. And what he found out later was Richard Cottingham came out of the lift with a bag or several bags and bumped into that journalist guy and then walked out like he didn't even see him.
Oh, my God.
So the guy went to the fourth floor and... he smelled the smoke and he saw like ashes in the air.
Oh my God. Well, because he thought that guy was so weird. Like, I'm going to check it out.
He went to that hotel and he was there and he asked for a room and they said, oh, it'll be ready in half an hour. So he was just kind of wandering around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so he went up there and then he came back down after like smelling the smoke and hearing the fire alarm and having that weird interaction with the guy in the elevator.
Yeah.
He was like, nah, I'm not going to stay here. And he left.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
Dude. So,
but he was like, I know for a fact that it was Richard Cottingham and what he had in the bags were most likely
heads and hands.
Yes.
You didn't fancy telling someone that their fucking hotel was on fire.
I think it all like happened quickly from the way that he describes it. He like went to the fourth floor and like when he smelled the smoke, other people did too. So he was just like, I'm getting out of here. I'm not gonna stay here for the night.
Good call.
So that's how I found that story and I was like, oh, that's kind of a near miss, but then I kept reading about it and
yeah.
So back to the story. So he picks up 18-year-old Leslie Ann Odell
mm-hmm.
and they go back to the same hotel in New Jersey. He offered to give Leslie a massage, so she rolled over onto her stomach. He straddled her back and he drew a knife and put it to her throat as he snapped a pair of handcuffs on her wrists.
Oh.
At that point, he started torturing her. He nearly bit off one of her nipples.
I hate this guy.
I know, he's the worst. He said to her, "You have to take it. The other girls did. You have to take it too. You're a whore and you have to be punished." So he thought that he was punishing sex workers.
You think you're fucking God, basically.
Exactly. Like, he has the authority
to... That's your job, is it?
Decide. Like... Yeah. But it's also like, you were also getting off on this, so...
Oh, hugely. Come on, you're like...
using this as an excuse.
Yeah.
So Leslie Ann began screaming so loudly that it scared hotel staff, who were already reeling from the murder 2 weeks earlier.
Oh,
so
Christ,
when they
yeah.
heard screaming, they were like, oh, shit. So they called the police and they rushed to the room, demanding that Cottingham came out. Once Cottingham heard the police arrive, he tried to flee but was caught and arrested in the hallway. Leslie Ann was found, beaten and raped, but she was alive.
Good. Oh, I'm yes. so happy.
Yes. Good job, Leslie Ann.
Because I was thinking, like, how do you know the story of what exactly happened? And it's because she didn't right. die, which is amazing. Good.
It, but she also said, like, once he said that to her about how she needs to be punished because the other women, she was like, well, I'm going to die, so I'm going to yell. I don't care what he does to me. I'm going to yell and yell and yell and not yeah. let him. Enjoy it.
Good for her. Also, like, it's yeah. his own undoing, because he obviously gets turned on by them being scared. So he probably right. like didn't think, fuck, she's screaming, someone's gonna hear that. He's probably just enjoying it, because he's like obviously yeah, a piece exactly. of shit. And it's like, that's what got you caught, because you were too yep. far into enjoying it to think, someone might hear this.
Yeah, idiot. So she was alive. In the room, police found handcuffs, a leather gag, two slave collars, a switchblade, replica pistols, and a stockpile of prescription pills.
Fucking hell.
This is like golden years of serial killers.
I know.
Well.
I was going to...
What?
Like, earlier I was like, why didn't they connect them? But it's probably because there was about a fucking thousand weird shitty murders going on that, like, they were just like, could be anyone. Like,
yeah, I think this was... No, maybe Son of Sam was earlier than this. I'm not sure, actually.
And New York at that time was a nightmare anyway for crime, apparently, right? So they were snowed under.
Right. When you read about New York, especially that journalist who ran into him at the hotel, he described it as there was just a huge, like, red light district.
Mm-hmm.
And where you would go to get a taxi, there was just, like, sex workers everywhere and pimps and, like, drugs and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, bad bit of town.
Yeah. Once in custody, police began building a case against Cottingham. Searching his home, detectives were able to find a trophy room which contained multiple personal items and keepsakes which belonged to his victims.
Oh, I hate that.
I know. But it's also like...
You're begging to get caught in a way. It ties you to it.
Yeah.
So, like, unequivocally.
Yes. It's so helpful.
There is no way to get out of that.
Whatever is in a serial killer's DNA, they have this compulsion to keep a trophy, which is both disgusting but also extremely helpful.
Yeah, true.
And that's it. So while questioned, one of Cottingham's only admissions of guilt was, "I have a problem with women."
I don't even know what to say.
No shit, Sherlock.
Fucking hell.
Weeks after his arrest, his wife finalized their divorce. So
yeah, I would.
She was like,
I do not want your second name anymore.
No. Me and the kids are out of here.
Yep.
As police built their case, three surviving women came forward to tell police of meeting Cottingham in bars and feeling sleepy afterwards and then being assaulted
oh my
by Cottingham.
God.
So that also proved that he was drugging women in bars and stuff and attempting
yeah to I wondered what the prescription drugs are about, because it's not like he wants to. Maybe that was him just warming up, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Seeing what he could yeah. get away with, because obviously later on the crime's like escalated like hugely.
Right, exactly. So, due to the testimonies of the surviving women, especially Leslie, who screamed her head off. Sorry, that's said in bad taste.
Oh! Well, she didn't.
She did, but she didn't. Like, all the phrases that she screamed bloody murder, she screamed her head off.
Yeah.
Those are all bad taste.
Scream loud enough to wake the dead.
Cut those out.
Yeah. There's no way around it. I get what you're trying to say. Yeah. And it wasn't out of disrespect. It was a pure accident.
Yes, it was. So a strong case was built against Cottingham due to the testimonies of the surviving women. Cottingham went through multiple trials for murder, arson, and assault. In May 1981, Cottingham was found guilty of the murder of Valerie Streets, drawing a sentence of 173 to 197 years in prison. In two following trials, he was found guilty of 4 second-degree murders and was sentenced to 75 years to life.
So how many victims in total did he have?
So he says that he had 80 to 100.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that in a second. But while he was in prison, he attempted suicide twice. Apparently, he broke his glasses and tried to use the glass as, like,
a razor.
Yeah. Such a coward.
Yeah. Well, it didn't work, so fucking too bad. Face the music, cunt. Yeah.
Right. You're still here. He's still alive. In 2010, he confessed to the murder of Nancy Vogel, the first woman who was found in her car naked.
Oh my god, that's so long after.
Yeah, that was a cold case until he admitted to it.
Wow.
In 2010. In 2020, so last year, he admitted to have also killed Jacqueline Harp of Midland Park, Irene Blaise of Bogota, and Denise Falasco of Closter, all of whom were killed in the 1960s. And they were all cold cases.
Wow.
Which marked the beginning of his spree to be much earlier than what is thought.
Mm.
The Bergen County Prosecutor's Office has yet to confirm those claims. So he did admit to them, but it was only last year. So they're still putting together the evidence in the cases.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that's the story of Richard Cottingham, aka the Torso Killer.
I hate that guy so much.
And he's still alive. He's still in prison.
Oh, you piece of shit.
He looks like Santa, I'm sorry to say.
Worst Santa ever. Fucking hell.
He has a big white beard.
That is not Santa.
It's not Santa.
No.
So yeah, there's not really a total number of women that he killed because he's still, and there's still things coming out against him.
Wow. Oh, but see, this is why, like,
yeah.
Obviously you wish he got the death penalty, but he admitted to Nancy Vogel in, it was Nancy Vogel, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. He admitted to her in 2010, and so now that's solved. So that's a pretty good argument towards not having the death penalty for him, or for anyone, right. I guess. I don't know.
He just named 3 more women. So yeah. It's like, if they had kept watch on Israel Keyes, you know, who knows if Rodney Alcala will ever talk, but
yeah,
it is the reason why the death penalty kind of hinders investigations sometimes. Because yeah. You never know if somebody has a change of heart and wants to admit it.
Yeah, definitely. I was, this is my chance to mention Israel Keyes again. I was listening to the podcast.
Always.
I was listening to the Israel Keyes podcast that I love, and they were saying, Josh Hallmark said he went into a fucking shop, into a Walmart, and this is what he bought: a shovel, air freshener, and lube.
This stuck in my head after I heard this, and it has stuck in my head for the past 2 weeks since I heard it. A shovel, air freshener, and lube.
What fucking cashier looks at that and goes, yep, seems perfectly above board? Like,
this guy seems with it.
I would be reporting him to the police for buying that. I'd be like, you want to keep an eye on who, what's his face? Like, or this guy. I would find his license plate and be like, look out. Because this guy is up to no good. No good can come of that.
Yeah.
Of those purchases. Or in tandem.
It's like you don't want to think about it, but then you do. Ugh.
If anyone ever comes into your shop and buys fucking shovel, air freshener, and lube, call the police. That's my advice.
Call the police. Don't think about it. Just call the police.
Yeah, there is no, oh, maybe he's, no, that is a murderer. Like, absolutely not. That was a great story. Do you know the name Nancy Vogel really rings a bell? I think I might have seen like an unsolved thing on her or a cold case thing on her.
Oh.
Because that is the part of the story that really rang a bell with me. But it's really good that obviously they've solved it. They must have some evidence that like distinctively ties him to it, or he must know some details that they never released or something like that.
Right, exactly. And he says he did 80 to 100, which could be him bragging.
Dude, you're not great at hiding bodies.
Right.
I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true because he's not good at hiding his victims. He doesn't bury them. He just leaves them where they were.
Or he sets them on fire.
Yeah, which is both really obvious, like MO.
This is very obvious. It's going to be found straight away if you do that.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think he's quite the stealth killer enough for that to be true. But, you know.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Anyway, I have got to go, baby.
Yeah, it's late your time, right?
Yeah, it's like 20 past nine and I said I would meet someone and I'm just big fat not doing it. But yeah, I really enjoyed that episode. It's nice to hear about a survivor.
Yes,
it's definitely nice to hear like someone getting one over.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like you want to believe that if you were in that situation, maybe you'd do something similar. Or like, it's
fate,
just inspiring.
Fate would spare me. Yeah, I like to think that.
And yeah, listen in next week and we'll answer Catherine's second question about which serial killer we would take
get
off
rid
the
of.
Face of the earth. Maybe this guy. He's horrible.
He is horrible, but I already have mine in mind. I've already decided.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. So let's listen to this. Find out next week.
Find out next week.
Yeah.
Transatlantic crime.
Yeah, and then you can tell us all about your vacation as well. So that'll be nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Transatlantic Crime this week. If you liked what you heard, please rate, review, and subscribe.
And if you'd like to follow us on social media, you can find us on Twitter at TransatCrimePod, Instagram at TransatlanticCrime, and on Facebook with Transatlantic Crime Podcast.
Thanks, bye.